Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girbar Dhari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girbar Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Gopi Jana Balabha Girbar Dhari. Jai Gopi Jana Balabha Girbar Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Om Vishnabhavam Sabadara Jikacharya Sata Sisi Mad Asi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Vishnabhavam Sabadara Jikacharya Stote Sata Sisi Mad Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasi Thakur Prabhupada Ki. Go Premanandi. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Yesterday, we were speaking about how real sustainability involves gratitude. And you may have been wondering, well, what is gratitude? How is it expressed? First of all, gratitude is appreciation that someone has done something for you, or something has done something for you. And then there is the expression of gratitude. And that is what I see pervades the Govardhan Echo Village. The expression of gratitude. That means reciprocation. Not simply taking from the environment, not simply taking from people, not simply taking from animals, but giving, giving. A two-way street of reciprocation. As we were speaking yesterday, the problem with the standard or materialistic definition of sustainability is that it's all about how to take in a more efficient way. Nature, the environment, is considered to be like a stockpile of resources, a warehouse of resources, or a go-down of resources. And the purpose of environmentalism is to manage the using of the resources so that there's enough not only for today, but for tomorrow. So it's all about taking. How to, as we discussed yesterday, it's all about how to take in a more efficient way. There's no recognition of where are the gifts coming from. Just let's take, take, and take. And now we've become advanced. We're not simply taking in a way that is all for today and forget about tomorrow. Now we're worried about taking for tomorrow. We have advanced. So what I see pervading here at the Govardhan Echo Village, Echo Project, is constant reciprocation. Taking the gifts of nature, taking the gifts of human beings, taking the gifts of the cows and other animals, and giving, giving, giving. The problem with material sustainability is that it treats everything around you and even other human beings as commodities or products. The fancy English term, for those who want to know, is commodification. That means to see everything as a product, an object for you to use. Forget all about where the energy is coming from. Forget all about any expression of gratitude towards the source of everything, and just use, take and use, take and use. So, if you want to know the fancy terms, commodification and appropriation. Appropriation is a nice word meaning grabbing and using for your own purposes. So that behavior cannot benefit a human being. Because a human being, as the Shastra tells us, a real human being is conscious of energy and the source of the energy and our duty toward that source. And gratitude goes beyond duty. Duty means, all right, you've given me something. I recognize that, and I have some obligations to you. But gratitude means you have so kindly given me something, and I'm happy to express, to reciprocate. I'm happy to express gratitude for what you've done for me. Heartfelt appreciation. So that is what I see pervades the Govardhan Echo Village. At every step, people can see some expression of gratitude for the Yamuna River, for the sadhus of the past, the sadhus of the present. Reciprocation with the people, the free prasad distribution, so much help going on in the local area. In other words, it's quite obvious that the emphasis is on giving. And that makes life very blissful. If you just look at nature as some system for giving you what you want, that makes life very cold and heartless. If you just, even if you talk the ecological talk, nature gives us ecosystem services. Sounds very official and cold and sterile. It is. But the Bhakta, the Krishna Bhakta, sees everything as the gift of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and constantly glorifies Krishna for those gifts. So I'm hoping to give you this perspective on what you are so wonderfully doing here. Just like in the spiritual world, the description is there of the topmost portion of the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. Every step is like dance. Every word is like song. So here I can see every step is some kind of reciprocation going on, some expression of gratitude, some giving. And when you're giving, that inspires reciprocation. Someone wants to give back to you. So this project is a great lesson in reciprocating with nature, reciprocating with human beings, reciprocating with the cows and other animals, reciprocating with the land. You see, we were talking a bit yesterday also about some economics. How the emphasis in a materialistic society is economic growth at all costs. In Vedic civilization, it's not that there's no economic growth, but the whole society is not geared toward economic growth. Certain members of the society are focused on economic growth, but the whole of society is centered on Yajna Vai Vishnu, Yajna for Vishnu. But what you have today is a mess in that every person is being urged, economic growth, make money, get more money somehow. Every person. You want to buy this consumer product, that consumer product, you need more money. So this is what the Vaishnavacharyas protest. A civilization that is wrongly directed. I like the way Srila Prabhupada once explained the problem. He said, we are not against the advancement of industrial civilization, even though it's suicidal. In this way, he spoke two things at once. Prahlad Maharaj so vividly describes in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, that efforts for economic development simply are a waste of time. Does that mean no one should try to earn wealth? No. It means if the whole goal of society is focused on that, then you've missed the point. Natevadu swartha katimmi vishnum. You don't know what your real self-interest is. You don't know what your real goal in life is. Durashaya ye bahir artha manina. You're so ambitious to take shelter of the material world and expand your economics. You consider the external to have such value. So this is our criticism of materialistic society, and the whole mess can be turned around by expressing gratitude, by giving to other living entities, giving, of course, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is the example that this project is setting. And it's a light, a beacon in the darkness. Having discussed that, we want to continue along some lines of what we were discussing yesterday. The activities of the spiritual world, where everything is about different degrees of intimacy in reciprocating with Krishna and Krishna reciprocating with his devotees. This is a far distance from what we experience in the current material existence. If you want to understand human beings today, consider them to be this: flesh-covered devices for extracting and burning fossil fuels. That's the human being today. They can't live without that. And everything depends on the exploitation of nature. Just like the coming revolution in electric vehicles. That's going to save the day, right? But the electric vehicles depend on rare earth minerals. They depend on cobalt. They depend on lithium. Cobalt is, most of the world's cobalt comes from a tiny part of a country in Africa, Democratic Republic of Congo. The cobalt is produced under horrible working conditions. But the average person who buys an electric vehicle has no idea of the wretched conditions of the workers who mine the cobalt. And then there's competition among nations who's going to control the world's limited cobalt supplies. This is not human life. I like what Srila Prabhupada writes in the second canto of Bhagavatam, that by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, everything a human being needs to live is provided by nature in a way that you don't have to undergo much transformation of those resources. In other words, you don't need massive industrialization so that human beings can live properly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has provided resources that with just a little bit of exertion can take care of the human needs. So this is the mess that human beings have created. Whereas in the spiritual world, in Goloka Vrindavan, everyone is simply thinking of Krishna's satisfaction. Even when the Brijbasis are apparently in danger, they're automatically thinking about Krishna. We don't want Krishna inconvenience. We don't want Krishna in danger. Krishna is the life of their life. Living like that, according to the current standards of bewildered civilization, living like that's considered very primitive. You should be thinking about expanding your domination of nature. You should be thinking about expanding your domination of other creatures, domination of other human beings. What is the solution? Lord Chaitanya himself showed the example during his childhood leelas as Nimai. As a little infant, he would see a bird flying through the sky, and He would say, I want, I want, I want. And if he didn't get it, he would start crying and throwing a temper tantrum. If he would see the sun or the moon in the sky, I want it, I want it, I want it. And he would cry and kick his little legs and thrash about with his arms until the ladies surrounding started to chant Hare Krishna. And then he would stop. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura says a very interesting thing about this Leela. He says this is Mahaprabhu showing the futility of material desires. This is little Nimai showing you can't get what you want. You're not satisfied. You throw tantrums. But if there's kirtan, then you have a different reality. Then you can be satisfied. So he's showing that as a little child, thrashing about, I want, I want, I want. And he wouldn't stop until the ladies started to chant Hare Krishna. And then he stopped. In this way, showing that glorification of Krishna is the practical solution. Sometimes we forget that the bhakti lifestyle solves problems. We're not just about religious belief. We are about watering the tree at the root and solving the problems. So in the spiritual world, everything is centered upon Krishna's pleasure to varying degrees of intimacy. So we'll talk about that. We'll start where? We spoke about Uddhava yesterday. We're going to go to Brihad Bhagavatamrita, a chapter called Prem, and we're going to talk about Uddhava's house. In Uddhava's house in Dwarka, we find Gopa Kumar, the main character in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the main personality. Why is he in Uddhava's house? He's there because Lord Krishna, as Dwarkanath, the Lord of Dwarka, sent Gopa Kumar, who's been all over the universe, you know, all over the material world, all over the spiritual world. He hasn't yet been to Golok. But Lord Dwarkadish sent Gopa Kumar to the house of Uddhava because Uddhava is expert in giving advice and handling Brijbasis. Lord Krishna, the Lord of Dwarka, was being very sensitive to the needs of Gopa Kumar, who, in case you don't know, is always in Gopa Bhava, the mood of a cowherd boy. And he's always dressed as a cowherd boy, even in the amidst the opulent atmosphere of Dwarka. So we can go back further, though. How did he get to Dwarka? He's been through all the regions of the material world, the heavenly planets. He's been to the coverings of the universe. He's been to Mahakalapura, the abode of liberation. He's been to Vaikuntha. And after Vaikuntha, where did he go next on his tour? He went to Ayodhya, the abode of Lord Ramchandra. The formula is given in Brihad Bhagavatamrita that many millions of times more blissful than liberation is Vaikuntha. Yet still more blissful than Vaikuntha is Ayodhya in the spiritual world. However, more blissful than Ayodhya is Dwarka. And then beyond Dwarka, Goloka Vrindavan, unspeakable how blissful the environment is. So Gopakumar has been going everywhere in the material and spiritual worlds, not yet reaching Golok. He's always dressed as a cowherd boy. His worshipable lord, his Ishtadev, is Madan Gopal. He was born at Govardhan Hill in Boma Vrindavan, earthly Vrindavan. He can't erase his constitutional position in Gopabhav. He can't erase that. So wherever he goes in the material and spiritual world, sooner or later he starts longing for Madan Gopal, the forests, the cows, the cowherd boys. So he went from Vaikuntha to Ayodhya. And there, every time he goes somewhere, he would think, this is the ultimate. Oh, never experienced such affectionate treatment from the Supreme Personality of God. He said this about Lord Narayan of Vaikuntha. And now he's saying this about Lord Ramchandra on Ayodhya. In Ayodhya. The warmth and affection he received from Lord Ramchandra in the abode of Lord Ramchandra practically made him forget about Madan Gopal and his Gopabhava. Gopakumar's Gopabhava. But if this happens everywhere he goes, sooner or later he gets the nagging feeling, where is Madan Gopal? Where are the forests of Braj? He tries to see the qualities of Madan Gopal, the Lord of Vrindavan. He tries to see those in Lord Ramchandra. And it works for a while, but sooner or later, it's not the same. It's not the same. Particularly, Lord Ramchandra is very precise in executing dharma, dutiful dharma. Whereas Gopakumar wants to see the playfulness of his worshipable Lord Madan Gopal, who doesn't always follow dharma. He plays his flute in the middle of the night. He attracts the gopi girls. But Ramchandra is just super moral, super strict. And so after a while, Gopakumar starts wondering, there's something missing here. Hanuman sees that Gopakumar is not so fired up all the time. So Hanuman takes Gopakumar under his direction and seeks to make him enthusiastic. This is Raghunath, Ramchandra. This is the everything. So by Hanuman's influence, Gopakumar lingers in Ayodhya, in the spiritual world, which again, remember, is more intense than Vaikuntha. He lingers there for a long time because of Hanuman's preaching. Hanuman was his counselor. Ayodhya, this is Ayodhya. Ramchandra, Lord Raghunath. How can you feel that you're missing something? This is it. We're here. This is the ultimate. You don't need anything else. So Gopakumar would go through a cycle of being satisfied and then... But try to understand that his dissatisfaction was not material. It was an expression of ecstatic love. We were discussing yesterday about Krishna feeling pain, hearing, from Srimati Radharani that there's so much suffering in Vrindavan due to his absence. And we discuss how that pain, of course, has nothing to do with anything material. We discuss briefly the knowledge of Advaita Gyan, knowledge of the non-dual. That means not that everything is the same. Advaita Gyan means that there are varieties, but they all are Satchitananda. They all are full of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Whether it's so-called pain in the spiritual world or so-called pleasure, the result is simply ananda. Inconceivable, right? Everyone thinks, give me pleasure, don't give me pain. But in the spiritual world, pain is blissful. So it's hard to understand, but Gopakumar, in his expression of dissatisfaction, where's my worshipful Lord? This is just not the same, what I'm doing here in Ayodhya. All glories to Lord Ramachandra, but it's not the same. In spite of Hanuman trying to make him more enthusiastic, and Hanuman, as we said, did delay Gopakumar in Ayodhya, Hanuman influenced Gopakumar to stick around for a long time. But these phases, these cycles, kept going on and on. Gopakumar would feel appeased. He would feel, all right, this is the best place. But then, no, this is not for me. I'm feeling so grateful. I've never before been treated so nicely by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No matter where I go, I've never been treated the way Ramchandra treats me. But he's not my worshipable Lord. This is not my scene, Ayodhya. So how was the situation solved? The foremost personality of devotee care, Lord Ramchandra himself, said, move on, go to Dwarka. This shows, Sanatana Goswami says, this shows how caring is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Ramchandra knew that Gopakumar is attached to me in my original form as Madan Gopal. Let him move on. And Ramchandra even, not only does he send Gopakumar to Dwarka, but he has Jambavan, the bear devotee, accompany Gopakumar to Dwarka. The point comes up. Devotees sometimes ask, how is it that persons who are not pure devotees are not fully attached to even the Lord of Vaikuntha? How is it that they can enter the spiritual world even briefly? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains a very interesting point in his commentary in third canto of Bhagavatam. He says that just like a king will sometimes bring into the palace some wild animals or some sages, some rishis, just for his momentary entertainment, and then he sends them away. Similarly, sometimes the Lord of Vaikuntha allows non-pure devotees to enter into Vaikuntha, and so the Lord of Vaikuntha can show, look at this personality. Look at the, and then, okay, now you go. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, those persons who are granted momentary entrance, like the four Kumaras, even though they were not tinged by the modes of material nature, they weren't, at that time, full-on bhaktas. And then, of course, there's Bhrigu, the one who put his foot on the chest. You wonder, how did he get in? How did he get there? And there are others, of course. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, they were granted a temporary visa. But they could not experience the ananda of the spiritual world. They were just granted some temporary right to appear, but not the Ananda. So anyway, Jambavan is going to accompany Gopakumar to Dwarka. And you hear about Gopakumar approaching Dwarka, and he sees some residents of Dwarka, and then he sees up in the distance the Sudharma assembly hall. And that's where the Lord of Dwarka, Lord Krishna, that's where he is at the moment. And so in that Sudharma assembly hall, so many extraordinary personalities, Vasudev, Ugrasen, Satyaki, Kritavarma, all these personalities who would accompany the Lord in his earthly leelas, they're there in the Dwarka of the spiritual world. And so Gopakumar from afar sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Not Lord Narayan of Vaikuntha, but he's in Dwarka. Gopakumar is in Dwarka. He sees Lord Krishna. And he's, of course, overwhelmed with ecstasy. He collapses on the ground. And then Krishna tells Uddhava, please pick him up. And Uddhava brings Gopakumar close to the throne where Krishna is sitting. And Gopakumar takes the head, Uddhava takes the head of Gopakumar and presses it to the lotus feet of the Lord. Words cannot describe how Gopakumar is feeling. And the whole scene is of such power and might and affection. More affection than Vaikuntha, but not quite Braj. And remember, Gopakumar is dressed as a cowherd boy. He's wherever he goes, he's dressed as a cowherd boy. Gopavesh. Seeing Gopakumar dressed as a cowherd boy, what happens to Krishna? He starts remembering my friends, my acquaintances, my lovers in Gokul. And he starts getting restless thinking about them. Meanwhile, Uddhava has been at Krishna's feet. And Uddhava is known as Mantri Raj, the best of the counselors. And he's speaking confidentially to Krishna. Sanatana Goswami points out that even if you could hear what he was saying, Uddhava is so tactful that you wouldn't understand the confidential information he was giving to Krishna. And he was speaking in a way that no one else could hear, but it didn't matter. Even if you would hear, you couldn't grasp the secret messages. Seeing Gopakumar, Krishna sees Gopakumar, who's dressed as a cowherd boy. Krishna asks him, how is everyone from where you're coming from? He's asking about the residents of Gokul. And Krishna is getting restless and overwhelmed by thinking of the residents of Vrindavan. Uddhava sees this sight should not be public. And so with his eyes, he gestures to Krishna. You don't want to be falling into ecstasy in the Sudharma assembly hall. It's time for you to go to your private quarters. Because in the assembly hall were so many royal personalities And here is Krishna being affected by the mood of Gokul, even though he's in Dwarka. And so Uddhava tactfully arranges that Krishna goes to his inner quarters of the palace, because the effect of Gopakumar's cowherd dress and Gopakumar carries a flute, it's too much for Krishna to maintain his composure. So he gets up. Krishna stands up, and that means assembly finished. And he begins to go, accompanied by Balaram and Uddhava. He begins to go to his private quarters. Behind Krishna and Balaram come 16,108 queens, along with their mother, the two mother-in-laws, Devaki and Rohini. And for all the 16,108 queens, each one had maidservants who perfectly matched the mentality, the personality of each queen that they were serving. And then behind the 16,108 queens, big procession. But remember, the spiritual world does not follow laws of time and space. Immediately you're visualizing 16,108 queens, each one with a team of maidservants. And behind them are the sons of Krishna. And don't forget, Devaki and Rohini, the mothers-in-laws of the queens, are there. So they all go into Krishna's inner quarters. And that's when more confidential exchanges happen with Gopakumar. He's also there. Krishna has taken him by the hand and escorted him to his private quarters. And Krishna starts becoming even more affected by remembering the residence of Gokul. And what is Gopakumar thinking? He's staring at Krishna, who is actually Dwarkadish, but suddenly he starts seeing Nandanandana. Krishna, the son of Nandamaraj, he starts seeing Krishna in Dwarka. He starts to see Gopakumar starts seeing Krishna in that way. And of course, he's overwhelmed with ecstasy. And once again, the devotee care given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead happens in an extraordinary way. Even without having been told, Uddhava knows the desire of Krishna. This Gopakumar is a bridge bossy. The palace life is going to overwhelm him. It's not his scene. Uddhava, you take him to your house. Why? Because you, Uddhava, are expert in handling the bridge bossies. You know where they're at. So in this way, Krishna entrusted Gopakumar to Uddhava. And so Gopakumar goes to Uddhava's house. He spends some time there. Gradually, the same problem starts to happen. That he's not feeling satisfied for long. At first, once again, just like in Ayodhya, oh, I've never been treated this way by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, such intimacy, such affection. But after a while, he starts to wonder. And he starts to wonder, especially because the residents of Dwarka are starting to preach to him. Like, you know, you're dressed kind of funny. This is Dwarka, where everyone dresses, you know, super luxurious. And here you are dressed in these simple, rustic cowherd boy clothes. Don't you want to get into the mood here? Don't you want to get into the bhav here? And so Gopakumar started feeling an inferiority complex. Nothing that mundane psychologists can understand. He was starting to feel out of place, although he had tried hard. In fact, he didn't have to try hard. For so long, he was so happy there. Ah, this is the ultimate. There's nothing like this. But gradually, because of his past in terms of being born at Govardhan in Boma Vrindavan and his attachment from Madan Gopal, that syndrome, that consciousness started to come to the fore. And at the same time, these Dorkavasis are getting on his case. Don't you want to change your clothes? This is Dwarka. So Gopakumar, with all this happening at once, his own wondering where is Madan Gopal, the Dwarkavasis urging him to change his dress, Gopakumar didn't want to change his dress. Why? Because he felt that would change his personal rasa with Madan Gopal, and he was clinging to that so tightly. So there he is, becoming bewildered. What to do? And then Narada Muni shows up. And Gopakumar, he's astonished. I've seen you in so many places in the material world. I've seen you in Vaikuntha, and now I'm seeing you here in Dwarka. And Narada Muni reminds Gopakumar that just as Krishna can expand himself, similarly his perfect devotees can expand themselves. Even Krishna's paraphernalia can expand, just like his Sudarshan Chakra, his Kaustubha jewel, they can expand. They don't have to be localized. So Narada Muni told Gopakumar, I've already discussed this with you, don't you remember? The devotee is one, just like the Supreme Personality of Godhead is one, but the devotee can appear in many places at the same time. This is one of the attributes of perfection. So Narada Muni says to Gopakumar, I see that you have a problem. And then Narada Muni turns to Uddhava and says, you are the one who can solve this problem. You have the inside track for dealing with Brijvasis. You got their blessings when you took Krishna's message to Vrindavan. So please start speaking in a way that Gopakumar can get some insight into his situation. Exciting, huh? That is Brihad Bhagavatamrita, part of it, which is, I call it the gold standard of publications after the Shastric productions. The gold standard for Shastric productions after the disappearance of Srila Prabhupada. All right, that's all for tonight. You're stuck at the house of Uddhava in Dwarka, and Narada Muni has appeared. So you see how big a responsibility Uddhava has. He's in the Sudharma assembly hall giving confidential advice to Krishna that even if you heard it, you wouldn't understand what was going on because Uddhava is so tactful. And now Uddhava has the responsibility of dealing with Gopakumar, who is always dressed as a cowherd boy and is feeling separation from Madan Gopal. So Uddhava is an extraordinary, inconceivably extraordinary personality. And there's much, much more. But that's all for tonight. Any questions about whatever you'd like to ask? Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak about Sri Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It if you don't have any questions, it's all right. You don't have to. As I said last night, Mohan Vilas warned me.
Hare Krishna, how pain is blissful in spiritual world?
How?
Pain is blissful in spiritual world.
Because it's a spiritual experience. There's no duality. Duality means hot, cold, pain, pleasure. You want the good duality. You don't want the bad duality. But in the spiritual world, all the varieties are Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Don't think with material consciousness that pain in the spiritual world is unwanted. Otherwise, why is Krishna feeling pain? It's another form of bliss. Oh, my devotees in Vrindavan are missing me so much. They want me to return. But I promised my mother and father, Devaki and Vasudeva, I would stay with them for some time. They want to educate me. They want to do this and that. And then there are the demons like Jarasandha. They can attack not only Mathura, but they can attack Braj. And so I don't want Jarasandha attacking Braj because I'm there. And if he attacks Mathura, I have to be there to defend the city. And there's so many reasons, I have to stay a while. But he's feeling, Chaitanya Charitamrita describes, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead feels pain hearing the petitions of the gopis, especially of the most dear gopi. So if you want to understand more, then we need to get off the bodily platform of seeking favorable material experiences and trying to avoid the unfavorable material experiences. We simply start to think of what satisfies Krishna. And with that consciousness, we can start to understand how all the varieties in the spiritual world are full of eternity, full knowledge, and bliss. I hope that helps you.
Thank you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, thank you very, very much. It was very soothing to hear how Vrindavan attracts the heart of everyone. Actually, Maharaj wanted to ask, in Vaikuntha, Lord is eternally there. Similarly, eternal Dwarka is there. Eternal Goloka is there in the spiritual world. These dhams are eternally existing separately.
Ayodhya dham also.
Yeah, Ayodhya dham also. So Maharaj, I wanted to ask if in Dwarka, Krishna is remembering Vrindavan. So is it like that? Means for similar for Vaikuntha and Ayodhya also? Or is it because Krishna acted in Bhaume Vrindavan in that Leela, going from Vraj Bhumi to Dwarka and remembering the Vrajvasis?
You're asking me, does Krishna and Dwarka remember Vrindavan?
Yeah, is it eternally happening there also like that?
Yes, he sees Gopakumar dressed as a cowherd boy, and that's why Uddhava has to indicate to Krishna, don't get restless remembering Vrindavan in public. Let us go to your private quarters.
So does it happen for Vaikuntha also? Vishnu also?
Narayan, there's no mention in the Shastra of that. But Dwarka is on the topmost planet, Krishna Loka. One other thing that made Gopakumar a little unsatisfied was that sometimes he would see Krishna and Dwarka with four arms. Although Sanatana Goswami explains that generally, for the most intimate devotees in Dwarka, they'll see Krishna only with two arms. But somehow or other, sometimes Gopakumar would see him with four arms, and that wasn't Gopakumar's Ishtadev, that wasn't his worshipable Lord. His Ishtadev is Madan Gopal, the Lord of Vrindavan. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, the cliffhanger was quite intense. I'm leaving for Mumbai tomorrow morning, so I'm going to be just stuck in Uddhava's house. But my query was related to the situations that we face in daily life. We are taught that we should surrender completely to the lordships. But the heart wants to surrender, but the mind does not easily lose control. I mean, even when we want to surrender, the mind is like, no. You can control this situation. You can look into it. So how can we tackle such situations, or how can we completely surrender, you know, by blocking this controlling tendency of our mind?
Look at the situation in this way. This is what I do. The way the material world is constructed is that as soon as you want to materially enjoy, you have to materially control. Try to observe this. That control, or that endeavor to control, may be so slight, but still it is what it is. It may be just by your moving your eyebrows to produce a certain result. That's control. Because you want to achieve a certain result for your own happiness. So if we are always analyzing throughout the day, what can I do that will give Krishna the most pleasure? You'll find that that's the natural surrender. Even we as tiny parts of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How would you feel if someone was always thinking, what would satisfy you? What would give you pleasure? You would take great notice of such a person. You've got that right. So Krishna's a person. He's not a sadist. You know what a sadist is? He's not taking delight in the sufferings of his devotees. Just see, I asked them to surrender. They'll never be able to do it. Ha ha! How I love to torture my bhaktas. I make bhakti so sweet but unattainable. Look how my devotees go through so many circumstances of pain trying to surrender to me, which is not possible. So also remember, we're dealing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who gives Krishna away. No one knows who is Krishna in truth, whether in the land of Krishna, India, or abroad. To understand Krishna in truth, that understanding is rare. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, they are giving out love of Krishna, even though no one knows who is Krishna. I saw Prabhupada explain this once in Atlanta. I was sitting right in front of him, 1 meter in front of him, while he was starting his lecture. And he began his lecture because there were at that time only Gornatai deities in Atlanta. So he began his lecture not by singing Jai Radha Madhava, but Padama Karuna Pahundwijana Nitai Gorachandra Sabha Avatar Sar Shiromani Kevala Anandakanda. Song by Lochana Das Thakur, I believe. So he chanted that and then did the Prema Dwani. And then what came next was the shortest lecture ever given by Srila Prabhupada. 1 minute and a half. He started talking about how merciful Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda are. They're giving out love of Krishna to persons who don't even know who who is Krishna? So he asks, how do you give out love of someone to persons who don't even know who that person is? And then he said, just take shelter of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, and be happy. Suddenly his voice cracked, and I was sitting in front of him, and I saw the tears shoot from his eyes like shot from a syringe. And he just stopped the lecture, got off the vyasa, and went to his quarters. So ordinarily, it's true. Surrender to Krishna, achieving Krishna is extremely difficult. And we're living in Kali Yuga, an extremely difficult time. But we have Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu. They make everything possible. Anything else? Gauranga Prabhu.
This is a question related to Srila Prabhupada's vision for farm communities. So I wanted to ask specifically that Prabhupada had a certain vision for New Vrindavan and then he had some vision for Gita Nagari. So what was the difference between the two and why is it that Prabhupada wanted the 12 forests and 7 temples only in New Vrindavan, or was it he also wanted in other places? And in general, what was the core difference in the difference between the vision between the two communities?
New Vrindavan, Prabhupada noted, was not very hospitable, not very accommodating for growing anything. The earth is very stony and hilly. The climate is very inhospitable, gets very cold. That he noted from the very beginning. Although he did give them instructions there about growing food and caring for the cows. But the instruction about building the 7 temples was very unique. However, when he came to Gita Nagari, he always talked about production. He would leave Gita Nagari and come to India and speak at his preaching events. At Gita Nagari, the cows are producing this and that, so much milk, and the fields are full of vegetables, and which they were at the time. So he always stressed food production at Gita Nagari. He didn't say anything about making a holy place of pilgrimage. Although His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj reminded me of Prabhupada in 1977 saying that at Gita Nagari there should be a diorama for every verse of Bhagavad Gita. But he never said that there should be so many temples and holy places created there. So the difference as I see it is that Gita Nagari is, as we discussed the other night, is very fertile, very ideal agricultural circumstances. In fact, when one of the devotees who found Gita Nagari, Paramananda Prabhu, he was the first person in charge. Because Gita Nagari, as we pointed out, was originally the New York farm because Prabhupada in his letters to temples in North America was stressing that every temple should have a farm. So there was no doubt that farms were connected to an urban temple. There was no doubt about that. That was everyone's consciousness. So New York had to get a farm. New Yorkers think number one always, so we have to have the number one farm. So that Gita Nagari was purchased in December of 1974. We Sankirtan devotees then had worked hard to sell books and raise funds for buying a farm. This is after Prabhupada cleaned out the New York temple for funds to buy the land in Juhu. You've heard that story. I don't need that. So then we got more money, and then what? All right. I was describing in Mayapur how devotees in New York were going out on book distribution 7 days a week. In fact, when last night I was talking about how I gave $20,000 in total in today's value on the streets of New York without ever visiting a temple, without ever going to a program. So that was all slated, that money was slated to go for a new building in New York. That's why the devotee who I talked about yesterday, Divi Shakti Mataji, that's why she was pressing me in a very effective way that we need to get a better building in New York. You're going to like it so much. It's going to have a theater. It's going to have a restaurant. It's going to have a library. It'll have everything a New Yorker like you would love. We just need the money. So in addition to whatever I gave, the Sankirtan devotees were going out, and I was one of them, 7 days a week. Start in the morning, end up in the evening, and then on weekends, Friday and Saturday, big shopping days, we'd start in the morning and go to 9 p.m. at night. And then we weren't finished. This was the time of the big rock music days, when there were huge concerts at arenas with 25,000 young people in an arena. And so we would go to those concerts. And that means we got back to the temple at 2 a.m. in the morning, because the concerts are at night. So we had been out from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. when the shopping centers closed, and then go to concerts. And they ended late at night. And by the time we get back to the temple, it's 2 a.m. We just said, might as well stay up for Mangal Arati. And then we would beg the temple president, we've gone to Mangal Arati. Can we just take a couple of hours rest during Bhagavatam class? Okay. And then we were out again at 9 a.m. So this is going on and burning hot summers, freezing cold winters and underground in the subways. And so we had collected a big stash for that time. In today's equivalence, it was about $1 million. And so at that time, Prabhupada was involved in his Juhu battle. And he wanted to buy that land and finish off the financing for it, at least the first installment. So he turned to New York and he wrote the temple president, can you loan me the money you have for your new building? Can you loan it for a few months so I can make the down payment for Juhu? And of course, the devotee replied, Jai Srila Prabhupada, yes, we'll be happy to loan the money for a few months. We haven't yet found a building, but we're just on the verge of finding something, but we'll loan it for a few months. All glories to your divine grace. So a few months passed. The money was sent. Prabhupada put down the payment for Juhu. And then the temple president writes Prabhupada, this is a few months later, Srila Prabhupada, accept our humble obeisances at your lotus feet. We're ready to buy the building in New York now. Can you repay the loan? And Prabhupada wrote back, and I saw both letters with my own eyes. He wrote back, what? You have given, and now you're asking back? Hare Krishna. So then the next accumulation by the Sankirtan devotees was funds to buy a farm in Gita Nagari. That was December of 1974. I first went to Gitanagari in January of 1975, 1 month after purchase. So the first devotee who was there, Paramananda, he was a farmer. His complaint about New Vrindavan was it's lousy land and they weren't farming. He wasn't into the whole developing the temples and that wasn't his scene. He was a pure agriculturalist. So with his expertise, he picked out Gitanagari and it was a brilliant find. So that's what we have today. And if you listen to Prabhupada's lectures, you'll always hear him glorify Gitanagari for productivity. And right before he disappeared from this world, he said he wanted to go to Gitanagari and show how to live off the land and start Varnashram Dharma. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
So thank you very much, His Holiness the Amrit Swami Maharaj, for your kind association. And we look forward to your regular visits. And on behalf of the Govardhan Eco Village, we wish you safe travels. Let us express our gratitude by loudly chanting, Haribo! Haribo!